Good morning, and welcome to Greater Good. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona Studios. The Greater Good Science Center studies the psychology, sociology, and neuroscience of well-being, and teaches skills that foster a thriving, resilient, and compassionate society. And now, some articles from Greater Good. The research-backed benefits of calling friends and family. Science suggests that texting may not be as good a way of staying in touch and building closeness as calling someone. By Jill Suddy, September 29th, 2025. Lately, I've been avoiding phone calls and texting people more than I used to. I might prefer to pick up a phone, but then I think calling someone will interrupt their day and be an unwelcome intrusion. So I figure it's better to text. But as one study found, we often overestimate how awkward a phone call will be and underestimate how much closer we'll feel to someone if we call them versus text them, even if we prefer texting. As a co-author of this study said, when it comes to maintaining and building the social relationships that are so integral to well-being, folks would be wise to connect with others using their voices by talking rather than typing. New research corroborates this recommendation. Though texting has become the norm for many of us, it may not give us the same interpersonal benefits or alleviate loneliness as well as talking on the phone does. Calling often feels more personal than texting, allowing us to connect with people in a more intimate way. As neuroscientist Daniel Levitin says, I actually think the old-fashioned telephone call is really nice and a different kind of experience when you're feeling lonely. The many benefits of calling. According to an overview of the research on calling versus texting, children and older people tend to prefer calling to texting, while teens and young adults prefer to text. But even those who prefer texting, calling may be a better way to strengthen our social bonds. One reason is that our voice communicates our emotions to other people in a way that texting can't, which is an important part of intimacy. Hearing the voice of someone you know can reduce stress and stimulate the release of oxytocin, the tend and befriend hormone that increases warmth and trust between people. Using emojis in texts seems to be a poor substitute for expressing emotion verbally, as they can be confusing and have culturally specific meanings that don't translate well. Calling may also beat out texting when it comes to avoiding misunderstandings. In one study, about 300 friends and romantic partners ages 16 to 57 were asked to find texts they'd received that caused miscommunication and describe why they'd had issues. They reported problems around understanding the feelings expressed behind the texts, including a lack of verbal cues that might help them to understand the sender's emotional state, for example, tone of voice, and not being able to tell if they had someone's full attention, i.e., wondering if their texting partner could be multitasking. Another issue raised was the brevity of texts, which can lack contextual information that aids in understanding. An example here is texting conversation reported in the paper that left the person confused. J, what happened? D, what do you mean? J, I don't know what you're talking about. Romantic partner, I'm ordering pizza, they have a deal. Me, who's they? Romantic partner, Papa John's. Me, watching a movie too? Romantic partner, wrong person, bye. It's easy to see how having exchanges like this could raise questions or leave someone scratching their head and potentially cold. The use of acronyms, word abbreviations, and poor or no punctuation also made some texts hard to interpret, which could easily cause problems in a relationship. As another study found, using shorthand in a text is more likely to make the recipient think you're being insincere and want to respond to you less. Not good for maintaining connection. Ambiguous texts, where the sender's intent isn't clear, may be interpreted in a more negative way, especially in more socially anxious people. Similarly, sending a text to someone and not getting a prompt response could create uncertainty, as the reason for the delay is unclear. It could signal anger, confusion, or rejection. Or it could simply mean they have not seen your text yet and need more time to respond. The immediacy of a phone conversation is much less likely to cause such problems. As you can interpret someone's feelings from their vocal tone, clear up ambiguities, and get an immediate response. Still, many of us prefer texting because we feel more in control of the conversation and can take time to think about what we want to say, especially when it comes to tricky subjects. As researcher Sherry Turkle put it, many people want to dial down fighting or dealing with difficult emotional issues with a partner or with their children by doing it online. This could be a mistake with unintended consequences. For example, in one study, researchers found that when romantic partners use texts to communicate about serious issues, broach difficult topics or apologize, their future in-person interactions become more fraught and conflictual. Only expressing affection via text had a positive effect on future interactions. Though this study didn't compare calling to texting directly, it's likely calling would result in more gratifying conversations, according to past research. Calling can also be especially helpful for the elderly people in your life. One study found that receiving regular phone calls was effective in decreasing elders' loneliness, even after considering other factors like their cognitive function, pain, age, and gender. Another study that compared how receiving in-person visits, calling, and texting affected the well-being of the elderly had more mixed results. But phone calls did still have some key benefits over texting. This could mean that parents or grandparents would benefit more from a phone call than a text. Even when we interact with strangers, hearing a person's voice creates a more positive connection. For example, one study found that strangers who conversed using the Fast Friends exercise, which involves taking turns asking 36 questions of an increasingly personal nature, felt closer at the end of the exercise if they did it over the phone rather than via text. Another study found that people believed that a stranger with difficult political beliefs had greater mental capacity if they heard their voice explaining their views on a contentious issue rather than reading the same argument in print. It humanizes the other when we hear their voice. Texting still has its pluses. None of this research is meant to imply that texting is always a poor choice for communicating. Reaching out to someone via text makes sense in many cases, such as when you're in different time zones and can't find a mutually convenient time to talk, especially if the alternative is not communicating at all. Or if you have problems speaking or any kind of hearing loss, texting could be an important lifeline for staying connected. Of course, texting really shines when it comes to conveying perfunctory information to someone quickly, like when confirming an upcoming meeting with your boss or letting someone know that you'll be late to dinner. Texting also may be preferable depending on how anxious you are. At least one study found that while feeling lonely makes a phone call more rewarding for you, texting may be easier and more rewarding if you have high social anxiety. Making a call can feel more intimate or awkward than texting for a socially anxious person, and reaching out via text might be a less risky first step toward further connection with someone. And then there are some of us who are just not used to talking on the phone, particularly young people who've grown up in a texting culture. Texting is ubiquitous for teens and may serve an important social function. Teenagers may not know phone etiquette or have an idea what they're missing out on by texting instead of calling. So texting may work just fine for them. Still, there are indications that they too recognize that calling may be better with certain people or in certain circumstances, and that they recognize they are missing out on closeness as a result of texting. At least some parents are questioning the value of texting for younger children and encouraging them to call rather than text. By installing old-fashioned landlines at home and coordinating with other local parents to do the same, they've seen their kids become better listeners and communicators, while also avoiding the potential pitfalls of social media exposure that a cell phone can bring. So why not consider picking up the phone and making a call a little more often? You might surprise yourself by how much better it feels to talk than to text. And your relationships might even become closer and more intimate too. About the author. Jill Suddy, Doctor of Psychology, is Greta Good's former book review editor and now serves as a staff writer and contributing editor for the magazine. She received her doctorate of psychology from the University of San Francisco in 1998 and was a psychologist in private practice before coming to Greater Good. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, bringing you Greater Good Magazine. And here's another article by Jill Suddy. Can joining a range of groups make you happier? A new study looks at the health benefits of belonging to religious, political, social, and community groups by Jill Suddy, September 11th, 2025. To be honest, I'm not much of a joiner. I have a lot of great friends, but I don't belong to many other social groups. I'm not on a sports team, nor do I attend a specific church or work for a particular charity. I guess my thought is that spreading myself thin that way might be bad for my well-being. But new research suggests otherwise. A longitudinal study in Britain has found that people who belong to more groups, and specifically more varied types of groups, may be happier and healthier than those who don't. The benefits of diverse group membership. In this study, Clifford Stevenson of Nottingham Trent University in England and his colleagues got data from almost 6,000 people participating in an ongoing study called the English Longitudinal Study of Aging, or ELSA, which looks at how different aspects of a person's life experience affect their well-being over time. Participants self-reported on many things, including their health and well-being. For example, how well they slept or how depressed or happy they'd been over the past week, how generally lonely they were, and how many different types of groups they belonged to. These could include churches and other religious organizations, political groups, community sports teams, tenants or neighborhood associations, parent-teacher associations, charities, or book clubs, to name a few. After analyzing the results, Stevenson and his team found that people who belonged to more diverse groups at one point in time felt less lonely and had greater well-being 4 years later. This was true even after taking into account demographic factors like age and gender, as well as how lonely or troubled they were at the beginning of the study. This suggests that joining more varied groups can help people feel better above and beyond how many groups they belong to. We already know that groups are good for reducing loneliness, says Stevenson. Now we know that multiple types of groups have a cumulative effect most of the time. Why would group diversity matter? According to Stevenson, joining multiple diverse groups could potentially satisfy different psychological needs that contribute to well-being. For example, past research has found that being part of a group outside of our families and friends increases our sense of belonging and reduces loneliness. It can also increase our creative self-efficacy, the feeling of being able to handle anything coming our way. By joining multiple types of groups, people likely increase their resources for handling adversity, says Stevenson. Though the ESLA study didn't include data on creative self-efficacy per se, evidence for this possible explanation came via a pilot study within the same paper. Stevenson and his team surveyed 328 people living in a relatively low socioeconomic status community in England and found that creative self-efficacy seemed to explain why people who joined different types of groups were less lonely and had greater well-being than those with less diverse group memberships. Belonging to multiple different types of groups means that you've got access to more ways of understanding things, more support from different types of people, he says. So you are more likely to be flexible and adaptable to challenges that you encounter. All group memberships are not equal. This doesn't necessarily mean that we should all join multiple groups willy-nilly, though. We may need to consider other relevant factors around group membership for groups to benefit us, says Stevenson. For example, The effects of group membership may depend on how healthy the group is in terms of its norms and the levels of support and resources it can offer its members, as well as how much someone identifies with the group. In short, personal fit matters. If you don't have a meaningful connection to the group, even if it is a very healthy group, it won't impact upon you, he says. It may also be important that the groups you join are compatible with one another, he adds. If one group's views don't jive with other groups that you belong to, or if they fight a lot, demand too much of you, or are exclusive in some way, they won't be as helpful to your psychological health, he says. If the groups that you belong to are incompatible, that can actually have a negative impact, he says. However, he adds, if you look at the statistical relationships between increased level of diversity within group memberships and well-being, we find a basic positive correlation. This means diversifying your groups is still likely good for you, and you might want to expand your social network that way. Joining multiple groups may help your community too. This study adds to a growing scientific literature tying up group membership to well-being, but also has practical implications. People in many communities around the world are suffering from higher levels of loneliness, and healthcare workers and others are looking for solutions, says Stevenson. Unpacking the particular role of diversity of group memberships upon loneliness is really important because it provides another way in which groups can be harnessed to help reduce loneliness in the real world, he says. Stevenson sees another reason to diversify your group memberships too. While there's debate among scientists over whether social diversification within communities has a negative or positive impact on health and well-being, his research comes down on the side of showing how diversification can be good for you. I think our research suggests a mechanism through which increasing diversity in social networks, but also within communities more broadly, can impact upon community health, he says. With that in mind, there is reason to consider applying this finding more broadly. In Britain, for example, Stevenson says there are many disparities in loneliness levels and health depending on where you live. And if your community is poorly resourced, you will likely find more loneliness and poorer health. If we know that greater group diversity is useful at both the community and personal level, we can perhaps use that information to help improve conditions for people no matter where they live. We've got a sense of what can be done in different communities to improve social connectedness and offer some degree of resilience to adversity across different neighborhoods, promoting community well-being, he says. Simply adding a little nuance and considering the diversity of groups within neighborhood contexts may also help. You've been listening to Greater Good Magazine, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona. If you want more information about Greater Good Magazine, go to greatergood.berkeley, which is BERKELEY.edu. They have topics including mind and body, relationships, workplace, parenting and family, education, and more. They also have quizzes that you can take as to your purpose in life, happiness at work, social capital, connection to humanity, altruism, gratitude, emotional intelligence, and more. They have videos, podcasts, and keys to well-being. You've been listening to Greater Good Magazine. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, thanking you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now, stay tuned to Sunsets of Arizona for more interesting programming coming your way.